Right? This shiur is dedicated in memory of Dr. Chuck Feldman, Zichrono Libracha, by his loving family. The shiur is about Zachor, about Parashat Zachor, which is this Shabbat. And it's probably a good idea for everybody to go to shul. My own children always go to shul this Shabbat. My daughters, that is, they never go to shul and any other Shabbos. Except for Bat Sheva, who sometimes goes to shul. What I mean is, it's even though it's a machloket about whether women are obliged in the mitzvah of Zachor, usually they take advantage of the fact that they should go to shul. So this way it's exciting. Let's look at what the pre-tzaddik has to say about where this mitzvah of Zachor came from. You see on page 3, there's the pre-tzaddik. The pre-tzaddik quotes the pasuk milchama l'Hashem b'Amalek midor dor. God battles with Amalek from generation to generation. It's hard to understand what this means, midor dor. Like, what's it got to do? You say milchama l'Hashem b'Amalek. That I understand. Why do you have to add midor dor? So he quotes the Tanchuma. You see? Tanchuma. Tanchuma is a midrash. It's a midrash agadah. Midrash agadah, it doesn't usually deal with any halakhic subjects. The midrash Tanchuma, at the end of Parashat Ki Teitzei, Rabbi Elazar Omer, Midoroshel Moshe Adoroshel Shmuel. So we know. We'll look at the text in a moment just to remind ourselves. In the generation of Moshe, there was the original battle with the Amalekites, who for some reason came and attacked Bnei Yisrael after they left Mitzrayim. Right? There's Yitzhak Mitzrayim. Then they get to a place called Rephidim. And in Rephidim, they were attacked by Amalek. And that's where you have the story of Moshe Rabbeinu held up his arms, and as long as his arms were up in the air, Bnei Yisrael were victorious. That's the story. The second thing is, he says, Midoroshel Moshe, Adoroshel Shmuel. Shmuel HaNavi directed the king at the time, whose name was Shaul, right? Shmuel HaNavi directed Shaul to do battle with the Amalekites, and he did, and he won, he beat them down, but he was directed to kill all of the Amalekites by Shmuel, and he didn't do that. He didn't also kill all their livestock and animals, but he especially did not kill the king of the Amalekites, whose name was Agag. Rabbi Yeshua Omer, Midoroshel Shmuel, Adoroshel Mordechai Vester. So the second opinion, Dor, right? What does Dor apply? Which generations are referred to? Rabbi Yeshua says, Midoroshel Shmuel, which we just described, Shmuel and Shaul, Adoroshel Mordechai the Esther. Now Mordechai and Esther fought against the Persians, but they were directed, these Persians were directed by Haman. And Haman is called in the Megillah many times Agagi. Right? And Chazal understood that as meaning that Haman was particularly Amalek. He was very Amalek. And therefore, the opposition of Haman to Bnei Yisrael is somehow similar to Amalek. And at that time, it would seem that the Amalekites disappeared. right? His family, Agag, his sons were hung. The battle was won. It doesn't seem to be much in the way of Amalek after that. But there's a third opinion. The third opinion is Rabbi Yossi Omer Darosho Mordechai VeEsther Ad Melech HaMashiach. Right? That even though after Mordechai VeEsther, they seem to be the physical defeat of Amalek seems to have been done, it nevertheless continues Ad Melech HaMashiach. I don't know exactly what Rabbi Yossi meant when he said Ad Melech HaMashiach, but if we like sort of give it a Rambamistic type of twist, the time of the Mashiach is a time of enlightenment. People understand things better, and they're not so interested in destroying each other, right? So not so interested in destroying each other, and so the Rambam says that when Yeshayahu says Vigar Ze'ev in Keves, right? Do you remember? A wolf, what's a Ze'ev?
Wolf.
A what?
Wolf.
A wolf in Keves with a sheep, right? That this is like a not a natural thing. It's not natural. So many Mefarshim say that there'll be a change in the nature of things. The Rambam disagrees. The Rambam doesn't think that Yemot HaMashiach is a time when the nature of things will change. So he says, Begar B'Zev and Keves is a realignment of the political reality. That before the Yemot HaMashiach, people naturally hated each other for whatever reason. And during the Yemot HaMashiach, or after the Yemot HaMashiach, Begar B'Zev and Keves, everybody will somehow get along. That's what enlightenment is, according to the Rambam. If you are a Rambam type of person, so you think that if everybody went to college, everybody would be friendly. Even though not the people in college are not always friendly with each other, nevertheless, that's the way you think about it. So it turns out, according to the Pritzadik, quoting the Tanchuma, that there were three periods, right? There's Moshe to Shmuel, right? Shmuel till Mordechai and Esther, and Mordechai and Esther until Yemot HaMashiach. And that's the reference, Bidor Dor. That's why the Pasuk emphasizes Bidor Dor, which might mean that in this kind of relationship between Am Yisrael and Amalek, there were three levels or three events that have to be dealt with. We're always supposed to wipe them out, but there's a difference in what we are exactly wiping out in the beginning and then later on. So he continues a little bit more he says, Shehu Gimel Dorot, Dor Chad, Dorim Shnayim, Areklat. There are three generations. Somehow because it says Dor, and then it says Dor Dor. So we can count that as three, even though I know there are only two. So you have to be a little bit liberal here. Inyan Machloktam de Gimel Pa'amim. He says, how is it that the Machloket between Bnei Yisrael and Amalek is divided up into three periods. Three periods, of course, three Tanaim, three periods, but that's what he says. Matzinu inyan mechiyat Amalek bedoro shel Moshe, that the machloket between Yisrael and Amalek in the time of Moshe Rabbeinu, she'az nizdaveg lehem Amalek, v'nilchemubo, that they came upon them and they fought against them. Uktiv, v'yachlosh Yehoshua et Amalek. We'll see the pasuk in a second. And it says in the pasuk that Yehoshua weakened them. Yehoshua was the general in charge of fighting against Amalek. And this is what it says in the pasuk. They didn't do away with Amalek. They weakened them. Right? Sherak echlish kocho. Shirakech lish kochos. So now let's look at those psukim. If you look at the page one on the sheet, it has this parasha at the end of the shalach, at the end of the parasha of the shalach. Vayavo amalek v'yimalechem imay Yisrael b'yifidim. Now the Torah does not explain why Amalek came and fought with Yisrael b'yifidim. The only one who explained himself in the Torah was Balak. Remember Balak? He was afraid of something, whether he was justified or not justified, but he was afraid B'nai Yisrael would conquer his people, but more than that, would conquer the land. That they come rushing through with their flocks and they would destroy everything in sight. And therefore, Balak felt justified in somehow trying to stop them. And the way he tried to stop them was by getting Bilam to curse them. That was his plan, his original plan. At the end, he did wreak havoc with B'nai Yisrael when they sent the Midianite women to entice the men into serving some sort of idolatry. But at the beginning, he was not successful. Here, however, it says, it doesn't say why. It doesn't say why Amalek came. Vayoma Moshe Yoshua b'chala anashim v'tzehi lachem b'amalek machar. You, Yoshua, go and fight against the Amalekites machar, whatever that word means, tomorrow. Why tomorrow? If they're coming upon you, so you can go. What the word machar is doing. And then you can read it also, machar anochi notzav al rosh ha-giva matei elokim b'yadi. I, my job, Moshe Rabbeinu says, I'm going to go up on this hill and I'm going to take the matev, the staff with which I did all the miracles, in my hand, right? Vayaz Yoshua kasher amalo Moshe lilechem b'amalek, and Yoshua did it. Moshe v'Aaron v'chur alu rosh ha-giva. Moshe, Aaron, and Chur went up to this hill. V'haya pasuk yudal kasher yirim Moshe yado v'gavar Yisrael v'kasher yanich yado v'gavar amalek. And everybody knows the Mishnah in Rosh Hashanah that says that this was an act of faith. Right, that B'nai Yisrael, that when Moshe Rabbeinu raised his hands heavenward, then the people looked up and they renewed faith and they were able to be victorious. When Moshe Rabbeinu put his hands down, it didn't work out so well, but he did it. And then it says in the next pasuk, "Tis vayihi yadav emunah ad bot abar shemesh." Somehow his arms were faith. They were the source of faith or the object of faith. I mean, however you want to explain that in a way that makes sense to in our vocabulary. Then pasuk yud gimel. You see pasuk yud gimel. Vayachalosh Yoshua et Amalek. And this is strange. If there is a mitzvah, even if the mitzvah had not yet been given to B'nai Yisrael, if there's a mitzvah to do away with Amalek, why didn't Moshe Rabbeinu direct Yehoshua to finish them off? Why Vayachalosh? Vayachalosh means incomplete, not a perfect victory, not a complete victory. Vayachalosh Yehoshua d'Amalek v'etamo l'fichareh. Vayom Hashem el Moshe pasuk yudalet, an interesting pasuk, which is itself problematic. Vayom Hashem Moshe tov zot zikaron. It is the first mention of the word zikaron. That when is something a zikaron? When it's in the sefer. When it's ktov lanu. Yeah. Ktov zot zikaron. Ktov zot zikaron. If you look at the Rashi in Pasuk Yudalit, I'm sorry, we're jumping around, but Ktoldos Gikaron Sheba Amalek Lisdaveg Li Yisrael, that the Amalekites came to kind of cleave to the Jews, called them the Kol HaUmot. They came first. That's the Zikaron. It was what was it that we remember about Amalek according to this parasha, according to Rashi, that they were the first. They broke something down. They were the ones, so if I would say it, if I would explain it, I would say they destroyed Yitziat Mitzrayim for the non-Jews. They destroyed because as far as Yitziat Mitzrayim was supposed to be a lesson for the entire world, as the Ramban points out, and the Rambam also in different ways. But Yitziat Mitzrayim, besides the fact that it was enlightening and enhancing for the people who were allowed to leave Yitziat Mitzrayim, it was also supposed to affect the world at large. And it would affect the world at large because they would understand that there was something special about Am Yisrael. They had something that no one else had. They had something that no one else could achieve, and that was the support of the one God who created the world. That's what they were supposed to learn. And this was broken by Amalek. Because Amalek, even though they knew all of this, and they had heard all of this, and this was like the only big news in town. It wasn't like modern day Israel. We have to listen to the radio, find out what's new, because there's something new every day. In those days, it wasn't so many things that happened. Yitziat Mitzrayim was big news, and everybody knew about it. Everybody knew about Yitziat Mitzrayim. And there was this choice, right? This moment, it was like a critical moment. Is the lesson going to be learned by the entire world or not? That was the question. Amalek said no. Amalek said that. That's why Moshe Rabbeinu had to fight the battle with Emunah. It was the strength that Moshe Rabbeinu gave to Bnei Yisrael was Emunah, because they were weakened by Amalek. Even though Amalek was fighting a battle, yes, but everybody understood that battle was against Yitziat Mitzrayim. And remember, where are the Jews? They're in Rephidim. They're like halfway from Mitzrayim to Har Sinai. Right? They're on their way to get the Torah. And to get the Torah is a time where you have to have a perfect faith to receive the Torah, in order to be able to stand before HaKadosh Baruch Hu, not stand before the Aron Kodesh in the synagogue. It says, Dalef Dei Miyata Omei, but to stand before HaKadosh Baruch Hu really, in order to stand before HaKadosh Baruch Hu really, you have to have that faith, that perfect faith. So that Moshe Rabbeinu was defending Am Yisrael, the faith of Am Yisrael, which was garnered at Yitziat Mitzrayim. He was defending that faith by holding his hands up. Yadav Emunah. How this works exactly, okay, we don't know. Maybe Moshe Rabbeinu was pointing at something. Maybe he was davening. But he was doing something which was an antidote to what Amalek was doing. And that's what Rashi says. They were the first ones. Who cares if they're the first ones or the third ones or the seventh ones? Because they broke the barrier of Yitziat Mitzrayim. They were the ones who did it. From ever after, anyone who came to attack, or anyone who was attacked by the Jews, did it on the basis that they could win, change the course of history, that they could change the path of Am Yisrael. Right? All of this came from Amalek, according to this parasha. Now, if you you look at the Rashi. You see the Rashi by Yavo Amalek. Samach parasha zo lemikra zeh. Right, this parasha comes after the problem of Mayim. Right, the complaint about not having enough water, and then this pasuk lomar tamid ani beinechem umizuman lekol tzorcheichem. I am always with you, God says, and I am ready to take care of your needs. V'atem omrim, ayesh Hashem b'kerbeinu, imayin. Right, the Bnei Yisrael were complaining. They're complaining about the relationship between God and Bnei Yisrael. There was always this problem. The only problem is the fact that there were miracles mean that there'll always be miracles. The fact that there were miracles that came one after the other, 10 miracles in series, does that mean that there'll be an 11th miracle and a 12th miracle? Right? This problem was a problem that Bnei Yisrael were wrestling with in terms of their own faith. He says, "Atem omrim hayesh Hashem b'kirbeinu imayin." So Bnei Yisrael were wondering. They said, "Hayesh Hashem b'kirbeinu, is God still with us? I mean, we left Mitzrayim, we're out in the desert, we have new challenges, new difficulties, new problems. Is God still supporting us? Chayechem." Chayechem is like a word of swearing, you know, I take an oath. Sha'akelev ba'vino sheichetchem, v'atem tzoakim elai, v'teidun heichan ani. So I'm going to teach you. I'll teach you a lesson. The kelev, the dog, is running out. They're gonna bite at you, and then so then you'll know where God is. You'll know about God. The kelev, of course, is Amalek. And then Rashi says, "Mashal." This is a metaphor for the following: La'adam shehir kiv bino al ktefo v'yatzal aderech. He put his son on his shoulders, and he went out on the road. So the son, sitting on his father's shoulders, would see something on the ground. And he said, "Abba, can you get me that sweater, that book, that cell phone, lying on the ground? Give it to me." And the father obliges him. The second time, the third time, pagu ba'adam echad. They met up with another man. Amalo oto haben, ra'ita et abba. So the son says to this guy who's walking along, "Have you seen my father?" He's on his shoulders. You get it? No. Okay, I can't help you. Amalo aviv eicha yodea eichan ani. So the father got nervous and excited. He said, "What do you mean you don't know? You don't know where I am?" Ishmichu me'alav ubaha kelev u'mishacho. He threw the kid off of his shoulders, and then the dog came and bit him. So you see that Rashi clearly states that it's a matter of faith. In other words, no matter how many times God protects you in series, like one time and another time and another time, right? No matter how many times it happens, you could still wonder about next time. You could still wonder about next time, because even today, I think it's certainly true. I mean, as we imagine that there are an unthinkable number of functions that enter into the divine decision, and there's no way for us to know what they all are. So we can be suspicious about our relationship, which is why the story of Avraham Avinu starts off with a covenant, starts off with an agreement between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Avraham Avinu. And that agreement is the thing that is supposed to yield us faith in history. It will work out. It will be as it should be. How do I know that? Because Hashem told that to Avraham Avinu. That's how I divide. Not for that, I wouldn't know it. All these questions would be correct. How do I know if God saved us yesterday that He will save us today? I mean, how can you make some kind of a rule out of the way God reacts to things? So this is the story of Amalek. Now, what's missing in the story? What's not in the story? Not in the story is a mitzvah, an obligation. Where does it all come from? So if you turn the page, you'll look at... don't turn the page. The bottom of the page, the psukim are at the bottom of the page. This is the end of Dvarim. Right, the end of Dvarim, which is the parasha of Zachor, which they will read in shul this Shabbat morning in a semi-neurotic manner. they read it in most shuls, and somehow the Jews have come to the conclusion that if there's a mitzvah of reading something out loud, we probably don't know how to read. Which I think is quite remarkable, because all we did for the last 3,000 years is read. I mean, that's all we do. But we've decided we don't know how to read it, we don't know how to pronounce it, we don't know how to say it loud enough or soft enough or paper, listen enough, and it can drive you a little crazy. But it's going to over quickly, no matter what. There is this very odd idea that it says in the last part of the Timchet, Zecher Amalek. Remember that word, Zecher? There's another word in Hebrew that's... this is called five nekudot. You know, five nekudot, a tzere and a segal. Ulpan, you remember Ulpan? Isn't that what you learn in Ulpan? Yeah. Five nekudot, zeh, cher. Then there's six nekudot. There's another word someplace else in the Tanakh. Zecher. So it was decided in some miraculous fashion that we don't really know, even though there's no manuscript evidence for this. All the vocalized manuscripts have five nekudot. Zecher. They all say Zecher. I can see about, you're not with me or I'm not with you. Also. When they read the Torah, they get to that word. So the Balei Koreh go into catatonic withdrawal, and they have to figure out a way to read both these words. The words with five nekudot, which is Zecher, and the one with six nekudot, which is Zecher. Now the really interesting thing about all of this, about this idea, is that Israeli Hebrew, if you go to that kind of shul where there's an Israeli who's the Baal Kore, who's not ashamed of reading in Sephardit, Israeli Hebrew does not distinguish between a tzeira and a sega. So what happens is, he reads exactly the same thing twice, and he thinks he's reading something different each time, which is certainly mind over matter. And everybody's happy. You know, they're very happy because they did it. They did whatever it is they're supposed to do. So look at what it says. Zachor. It says Zachor. Zachor is a command. It's a tzivui. Right? Zachor et asher asalecha ba'amalek v'derech b'tzeitchem v'mitzrayim. So what is it that we have to remember? What is it we have to remember? That they came first. That they were the first ones. That they acted against faith, because they said they denied history, the future. They denied it. Asher karcha ba'derech. So they met up with you in the road, and they eat away at the people who were in the back, who couldn't fight very well. That's what it says. This is a description of the situation. Now, what's the lo yirei elokim? What's the antecedent of lo yirei elokim? It could be Amalek, a lo yirei elokim, but that's no big deal. Say Amalek is lo yirei elokim. Why does the Torah have to say that? Of course they're lo yirei elokim. It would be more interesting if you could say that the Pasuk is talking about B'nai Yisrael. At the moment, there's Amalek and Yisrael. Now one of them is lo yirei elokim. So I say, obviously, Amalek is lo yirei elokim. But why does the Torah have to say that? We know that Amalek attacked Yisrael, and we know that from Shmot, but maybe lo yirei elokim refers to the Jews who are lo yirei elokim, which is why Moshe Rabbeinu had to climb up on the mountain or hilltop and hold his hands up for Yadav Emunah, because they were missing Emunah. In order to make a special note of this of this idea. Here, it's highlighted in my sheet here. The lo yareh, you see the Rashi, turn the page to the first thing on the right, four lines from the bottom. Rashi says, v'lo yareh Amalek Elohim, that the Amalekites did not fear God. Milaharalecha, because if they did fear God, they would not even attempt to do anything bad to you. That's the way Rashi explains it. But I'm saying to you that you could explain it as lo yareh Elohim also refers to Bnei Yisrael. They were not yareh Elohim, which is why Moshe Rabbeinu had to intervene in an act of emunah. He had to intervene in an act of emunah. And then it says in the pasuk, at the end of the pasuk, it says Timche Zecher Amalek. We talked about Zecher. Timche, wipe them out. Timche Zecher, but it says Timche Zecher Amalek. What does Timche Zecher Amalek mean? The memory of Amalek. So what is it that we're trying to remember? What is it that we're trying to wipe out? And what is it? It would seem simple pshat. It has nothing to do with Amalek at all. Because once the Amalekite broke down that barrier after Yitzhiat Mitzrayim and said, well, maybe the faith of Yisrael is misplaced, and maybe the Jews are going to get are not going to be given priority seating in Olam Haba. Maybe all of that is true and we can take them on. That's what Amalek did. So Timchet Zecher Amalek simply means there is this idea. The idea devolves from one nation to another. It's not about Amalek. It's about faith. It's about faith. So whatever it is that's causing the lack of faith in the world should be attacked. Should be attacked. How do we attack it? How do we attack that lack of faith? By Zachor. We attack the lack of faith by remembering. And now, if you go back to the pre-tzaddik. Let's go back to the pre-tzaddik. So the pre-tzaddik says, "B'dorosh of Moshe." I'm on line 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. So line 8, the first word is Amalek. The second word is Bedoro. Bedoro shel Moshe shaz nizavik lehem Amalek. Amalek cleaved to Bnei Yisrael v'nilchemu bo. Uchtiv v'yachalosh Yoshua et Amalek. And he weakened them. He weakened them because the attempt that Amalek made to deny the future of Jewish history as it is related to their relationship with God, that was usurped. Again, Uktiv by Yechlash Yoshua Damalek. Shirak Yechlish Kol Chochot means that Amalek continued to exist. It didn't matter who took upon himself the mantle of Amalek. It could have been Midian, it could have been Moab, it could have been Plishtim, it could have been Parsim in the time of Mordechai and Esther. It didn't matter. Ubedorosh al Mordechai v'Esther, Gamkein Haman Hitgareh. Bahem Haman stood up against them, ubikesh lashmid larogel labed, the words of the Megillah, to destroy, to kill, to wipe out. Vachakein nafochu, and after that it was turned around, it was turned upside down. Asher yishlitu ayudim heima b'sonehem, which is for them, for the goyim, for the nations of the world, is a proof that Jewish history marches on. It's not that the kibbush has any meaning, that the kibbush, that the conquest of the Persians in Persia means something to us. It doesn't mean a thing. But it meant something to the non-Jews. It meant something to the way they understood the place of the Jews in divine history. It's called Christomathy. Masha enkein b'dorosh el Shmuel. This is not what happened with Shmuel. Now that text of the story of Shmuel is on the sheet, but we don't have time to go through it. But you could go through it. Shitgare Amalek be Israel, and he says correctly. He says the Amalekites were not doing anything to the Jews at the time of Shmuel. They were just there, but they didn't come to wage war against them. Rak Hashem Yitbarach Tziva et Shmuel v'Shaul, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu commanded Shmuel and Shaul lachrim et kol asher l'Amalek, to place a kind of a cherem on everything that belonged to Amalek. V'ayinyan, v'ayinyan. So the pre-tzaddik wants to understand history. He's like, what happened? What happened between Amalek number one in the time of Moshe Rabbeinu and Amalek number two in the time of Shmuel and Shaul, right? In Amalek number one, the Amalekites came to destroy the belief that their history would unfold in a certain way. And they were weakened, which means that belief in the world was maintained, right? Other nations thought the same. And we saw that was true with Balak, even though he doesn't mention that. But we saw that in the case of Balak and Balaam, it was true that you could fight faith with faith of a different kind. Right? That's what Balak and Balaam were to do. Ha'inyan, he says, up five lines from the bottom, the third word on the line. Ha'inyan, this is what this all is about. Divamidbar. He says, in the desert, where they were about to get the written Torah. Written Torah, Ten Commandments, right? Ten Commandments. Moshe Rabbeinu was then going to sit down and write the entire Torah, which he did when he came down the second time, third time, from the mountain on Yom HaKippurim. He taught teaching Bnei Yisrael the Torah and writing it for them. Amalek b'Yisrael, and that's when Amalek took their stand against Am Yisrael, levatel mehem kabbalat Torah shebichtav. So he says there was an ulterior motive. It wasn't just to weaken their faith, which I think is the obvious pshat in the psukim. But he said, of course, you have to remember that they're on their way to Har Sinai. And why did the Amalekites choose this moment to attack? So he says, levatel mehem kabbalat Torah shebichtav. That's when they were supposed to get the written Torah, and this would ensure that they would never get it. The Zayabir Thidim, the place that they were at in the desert, was called Rifidim. Shenikrau Shem Shuripu Yatzmo Midivrei Torah. They weakened themselves from learning the Torah. The Zehaya, I'm on the last line of the right column. Zehaya, al yedei Amalek, sheshlich alehem arifyon yadayim midivrei Torah, mipnei sheyada she'al yedei matan Torah, yitbatel kulo. They knew that when they get to matan Torah, yitbatel kulo kamo she'amru, cherut mimalach ha'mavet, that they will be freed from death. V'zeu al yedei bitul ayetzer hara chegaram hapgam, and they knew that this would do, the Amalekites knew that this would do away with the yetzer hara, with the evil inclination chegaram hapgam, which made this blemish in them. V'hu malach hamavet hu yetzer hara. So he goes in a different direction. He says, you know, in order to kind of get all of these different ideas together. He's saying, look, where did Amalek get this idea? Where did he get this that they could do it? How come they weren't impressed? How come they weren't impressed by Yitziat Mitzrayim? He doesn't say, I mean, this is my introduction to what the pre-tzaddik is saying. Yes? It's not written in the words we just read. But the pre-tzaddik says, Where's Amalek coming from? Where they get so clever that they're going to go and stop the march of history and make God renege on the promise that was made to Abraham? Where they get this idea from? So of course it comes from Adam HaRishon. It comes from Adam HaRishon and Chava, who who sinned. And this is like the mystery that everybody, that is Hasidut especially, comes up again and again and again, and they say, look, the only way that God could create a world in which there is a creation, a being that has free will, is if there's a Yetzer Hara. I mean, let's leave aside the question of where this Yetzer Hara came from in creation. I don't know about that. But there's got to be a Yetzer Hara. It ought to be a choice. You've got to be able to say, well, I'll do this or I'll do that. I'll go this way or I'll go that way. I mean, I've got to have that's what making a choice means. And that's why we know about angels. That's why we'd have to be angels, because angels are the counterpoint to humans. Angels always do the right thing, and they always do exactly what they're told to do. And they don't have choice. They don't have free choice. We have free choice. And free choice means that no matter how righteous you are, no matter how perfect you are, no matter how you keep the mitzvot and avoid the averot, no matter all of that, you still have a kind of an itch. Maybe I could just do it once. Maybe I'll just do it this time. And that was what happened to Adam and Chava. However you explain what led them to follow the dictate of the Nachash, I mean, however you explain it, the fact of the matter remains that they did it. And the fact of the matter also remains that their awareness of the presence of God superseded anything we can even imagine. I mean, walking in the Garden of Eden, you know, God will talk to them. Just straight away. I mean, it's not something, it's not a feeling or an experience that we have any way of locking into or connecting to. So, Amalek knew that. Amalek knew that there was this Yetzer Hara, and they knew that I'm making it up a little bit, right? But I think I would say that that the pre-tzaddik is the influence for the story that I'm making up. That they knew that if Bnei Yisrael get the Torah, because they are pure, and that's what the Gemara in Shabbat that Pesach and Amud Aleph says, that Bnei Yisrael were cured from the chait of Adam HaRishon. They, as standing at Har Sinai, they were pure. They didn't have any residual chait. They were overwhelmed by the experience. They were overwhelmed by the experience. There was no chait at all. There was no chait at all in them. And so they knew, the Amalekites, that they had to get them. That together, what's a better way of getting them than having a war? Because in a war, everybody makes these kind of decisions. Everybody fighting in the war: should I kill him? Shouldn't I kill him? Should I try to kill him? Should I go forward? Should I go backward? It's the perfect time. If you've ever been in a war, take my word for it. Oh, you don't have to take my word for it. I'm not a great warrior, but I was in a war. And you know, you do things. You think of doing things that you would never think of if you're in a normal, regular kind of situation. So he says, "Amalek Zitra Bisha," and we have a quote from the Zohar that says, "Amalek is the Yetzer Hara." Right. So that's what Amalek was. Amalek was in order to make it current. I mean, I think the pre-tzaddik, you have to understand. The pre-tzaddik is saying it's not a limited kind of thing. Something goes on all the time, and therefore you have to get rid of this. And then he goes on and says, "Came with the Rosh Mordechai Esther, Shazay Hazman and Sheikh Knesset Agdolah Sheyizdu Torah Shabal Peh." Kibosh Avrus. Chazal had this strange idea. They had this strange idea that Kabbalat HaTorah Shel Torah Shabal Peh, La'idim Ma'idah Rabbi Simcha Kimu V'Kimu HaYehudim, that they accepted the Torah Shabal Peh on Purim. Why they accept the Torah Shema? Why somebody come up with such a crazy idea? Where's there? All there is Mordechai and Esther and Haman and Achashverosh. There's no Kabbalat Torah. Even Chazal knew that. that this is like a strange idea. So how would they say, how can they say that the Kabbalat HaTorah, Torah Shebaal Peh, was at that time? I mean, where did they come up with this idea? I mean, not come up with this idea, where do they imagine that this could actually be? This is, well, you know, is God watching them or not watching them? What's Torah Shebaal Peh? What is Torah Shebaal Peh? Torah Shebaal Peh is the ability to think as God would think. The ability to move. You know, somebody asks you a Shaila. Somebody asks you a Shaila. So what is the Shaila? What is it that they're asking? They're saying, well, what would God say in this case? As we know, when we mentioned it already, right then, when Yitro wanted Moshe Rabbeinu to set up a court system, and Moshe Rabbeinu didn't want to do it. Why didn't he want to do it? Because he said, when the people come to me, they want to get the answer directly from God, and that I can give them, and nobody else can do that. Right, so what's Torah Shebaal Peh? What is Torah Shebaal Peh? Torah Shebaal Peh is the confidence that my analysis and my reasoning is somehow in tune with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's a further chesed. It's a further chesed, a kindness from God that I can exist. I can be. I can answer the question. I can answer the question, which is a tremendous idea. The tremendous idea. Chachamim looked at Megillas Esther and he said, there's no mention of God, there's no divine intervention, there's nothing. There's just people who are devoted to Am Yisrael coming to conclusions and doing things that they're supposed to be doing. That's Torah Shebaal Peh. That's Torah Shebaal Peh. And that's what they saw. They saw the Megillah as that. And so the Pre-Tzadik says, Chei Dorosh Mordechai Ve'Esther She'azay Yazman Ashei Knesset Agdola She'yasdu Torah Shebaal Peh. Right? Ashei Knesset Agdola were the beginning of Torah Shebaal Peh that we know of. Torah Shebaal Peh that we know of. Right? Kmo She'amru Allah Ezra Bavel V'yasda V'Rav Chochma Mo'il Livatel HaRav Kohach. So we know that Chochmah trumps Kaas, anger. Malkein hitgare Amalek Gabkein b'Yisrael Livatel mihem HaTorah Shebaal Peh. And so you have another case. Haman, Agagi, is fighting against B'nai Yisrael specifically. You look at the Megillah, if you look at the Megillah, you look at the text of the Megillah, there's nothing you can understand about the hatred that Haman had for the Jews. What did they do to him? What did they bother him? Right? The fact that they were different. Persia was made up of many groups that were different one from the other. But he says, it was in order to vatel mehem HaTorah Shebaal Peh. Why? Why did he want to get rid of the Torah Shebaal Peh? This is the Pre-Tzadik. Why did Haman want to get rid of the Torah Shebaal Peh? Because it was the proof that Jewish history still exists. It was that critical idea that God is with them. Right? That's what Torah Shebaal Peh is. Torah Shebaal Peh is not just, I mean, you can think whatever you think, but people who believe think that the will of God is expressed in the Torah Shebaal Peh, and that's what Haman understood. That's certainly what the Pre-Tzadik understood. And that's why we say we receive the Torah Shebaal Peh. Haynu HaTorah Shebaal Peh Shal Zeh Haya Kfiyat HaKegigit Dal Torah Shebichtav Amru Naseh V'Nishma. Okay, so that was it. So the Torah, receiving the Torah, is a reflection of history. Now, as a result of all of this, a result of what happened with Moshe, and what happened with what was stated at the end of the Torah, and then Shmuel and Shaul, and then finally with Mordechai and Esther, we have an obligation of Zachor. we don't have an obligation to fight. I mean, this I'm saying something that is not generally accepted, but I'm going to say it anyway. We're not obliged to fight a war against Amalek. We're obliged to remember Amalek. Because if you remember on the level of ideas, there may always be an Amalek. It doesn't have to be a person with a Tudatzehut that says Amalek on it. Anyone who tries to stop the march of history that'll take Am Yisrael to where HaKadosh Baruch Hu promised Avraham Avinu, anybody who does that, that's Amalek. That's the way I understand it. And therefore you have the problem or the mitzvah of Zachor. Now there's one more thing I want to say. I'll get it in. What is Zachor? What does it do to remember? What does it do to remember? What is remembering in the Torah? Now I know that people wrote very intelligent and learned books on Zachor, but I have a simple thing to say about Zachor. When God created the world, as the Kabbalists point out, there are certain verbs that are used in the parasha of Bereshit that reflect creation. Aleph, Bet, Yud, Ayin. Aleph, Bet, Yud, Ayin is with Gershayim on top between the Yud and the Ayin. Aleph stands for Amira. Bayomer Elokim Yehi Or. Right? Bet is Bara. Bereshit Bara Elokim Et HaShemayim Bet HaAretz. Yud is Yitzira. Vayitzer Hashem Elokim Et HaAdam. And then Ayin is Asiya. Right? So these are the verbs that are used in the story of the creation of the world. And those are the verbs that the creation had to live up to. Because we have this idea that everything is reflected, right? Things in heaven are reflected on earth, things on earth are reflected in heaven. It's a kind of a midah, connected midah, but about ideas. The ideas of heaven devolve onto earth, and the ideas in earth, you know, are reflected in heaven. So the people who were created could not live up to that standard. They could not live up to the standard, and so eventually the Mabul came, the flood, and wiped out everything that God had created. Right? The Mabul, of course, is Tohu Vavohu. Right? It was the creation was about separating the waters from the dry land, and the Mabul was covering up the dry land with water, so you didn't have that separation anymore. It was all back to the beginning. I mean, God didn't have to recreate Yesh Me'ayin. He didn't have to make something out of nothing, but he could go back a few steps to the first pasuk of the Torah, right? V'ruach Elokim rachef al pnei ha'mayim. That's what you had with the Mabul. Now, how does the Mabul end? Perek Chet Bereishit. How does the Mabul end? It says Vayizkor Elokim et Noach. Vayizkor Elokim et Noach. God remembered Noach. Of course, since we're all Rambamistim, after a fashion, that's ridiculous. When God doesn't remember things, God doesn't forget things. And so what was the point of putting in that word? So the answer is, in the Davening of Rosh Hashanah, we quote the 10 psukim of Zichronot. Why do we call it? What do we call it? Only because we're feeble-minded and we don't remember anything. So we'll quote these 10 psukim. What do they got to do with doing tshuva, with standing before God? I mean, what does zichronot have to do with anything? So I think that the world changed after the flood. And by Yizkor Elokim et Noach, it was like God said to the world, if you just remember the right thing, you'll get a credit. In other words, it's a different world. It's not the world of Adam and Chava, which was a tough world to live in. It was a tough world to succeed in. It was tough, that world. It's not that world anymore. It's a world where the line has been lowered, or the bar has been lowered tremendously to Vayizkor. All you have to do, is remember. So that even if you're not winning the battle against Amalek, or you're not winning it as well as you should be winning it, if you just zachor et asher asah lecha Amalek, that's a positive enough thing to ensure the existence of the world that was created after Noach. And that's why the pasuk says Vayizkor Elokim et Noach, to tell us how important it is just to remember what happened. It straightens you out, that if you remember and you think about what happened, it creates the antidote to Amalek. And even if there is no nation in the world called Amalek, if they don't really exist, the Rambam says something about that also in the Moreh Nebuchadnezzar, but even if the Amalekites don't exist, the idea exists. And the way to counterpunch against the idea is Zachor. It's Zachor, and Zachor has the two sides to it. We have to remember what Amalek wanted to do, and we have to remember by Hiyadav Emunah that Moshe Rabbeinu was able to save us in spite of the fact that Amalek was strong enough to take that initiative. So that's what the mitzvah of Zachor is, as I understand it today. Have a good Shabbos.